I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut. Hey, Julia, thank you for joining me on the podcast. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. Wanted to talk to you about your recent story about a family in New London whose 13-year-old son came down with COVID-19. And their whole experience, the mother's name is Angeli Suriel. They're in New London, and her son's name is Jeriel.
We had been talking about trying to find stories of recovery, because as we know, the vast majority of people who do have COVID-19 do recover. A lot of people have mild symptoms. And we have been reporting, you know, on a daily basis about the increasing cases and also increasing deaths associated with the with coronavirus. So we wanted to make sure that we were telling the story of recoveries too, which are a little bit more difficult to track down. This woman, Angeli, posted on Facebook about her son's story. She has four kids. This was her 13-year-old son who got COVID-19. And it started a couple of weeks ago. She got a call while she was at work from him saying that he didn't feel well. And over the course of the next couple of days, he had a range of symptoms, headache, fatigue, fever, diarrhea, and vomiting. So she called his pediatrician who prescribed him Tylenol, and his fever still wasn't subsiding. It reached 104.9 degrees at one point. So his mother called the pediatrician again, and she prescribed him antibiotics for pneumonia.
That was like 2 weeks ago. I was at work, and he told me that he threw up, and he had a headache, and he told that he had a fever. So when I got back from work, he did have a fever. I gave him some medicine, and the next day he was still sick, and every day he was like having a different symptom and a fever, diarrhea, vomiting, body ache. And I called his pediatrician, and they told me to give him like Tylenol, not to use ibuprofen, and we did that. But he's still getting like high fevers, like 104.9 104, and even with the medicine I couldn't control the fever. He always had a fever.
She took him to the ER at L&M twice. The second time a doctor took a chest x-ray, and it showed that his the x-ray revealed that he had a pretty bad infection in his lungs.
And I call again, and they prescribe him some antibiotics, and they also wanted him to get tested for the virus. And he started the antibiotics, and I called that center in New Haven to get an appointment, speak to a doctor, and then she will decide if he can get tested or not.
Okay.
So I spoke to her, and she didn't want to do the test. She said that he didn't have all the symptoms, even though he only didn't have the respiratory symptoms. That was the only one he didn't have at that time. So she didn't want to do the test. She said, I'm 99% sure that he doesn't have the virus. It's not usual in kids like that. But, you know, I was quiet, and she was like, what's wrong? Are you okay? And I'm like, no, I'm not okay. Like, I have other kids here. I have a baby. He's only 18 months, and he has asthma. He uses a nebulizer, and I work in the hospital too. So, you know, like, I'm not sure if he has the virus, and you're telling me that you're 99% sure that he doesn't have it, but how about that other 1%? So she go ahead and schedule me an appointment for him to get tested. She's like, just so you can go to work, you know, saving because of the other kid that you have, whatever, but I'm still 99% sure he doesn't have it. So he got tested here in New London at Lawrence Memorial. That was Friday, the 27th. Saturday night, I noticed that he was having like respiratory symptoms. And I was like, this is not right. I called the doctor again. She told me that we were still waiting for the results because they told me that it can take like 7 days. I went to Lorison Memorial on Sunday because of the respiratory symptoms. And he was seen by a doctor there. And he checked his vital signs, his ears, his throat. And he said that it could be the coronavirus, but they were not sure because they didn't have the results yet. But it could also be a pneumonia, and he was already being treated for it because his pediatrician sent antibiotics to the pharmacy. So we went home. I wasn't really convinced, you know, by what he's saying.
His mother, Angeli, works at L&M. She's a personal care assistant. Can you talk a little bit about how that influenced her concern? Because I know that she was at home and she was checking his vitals and checking his temperature. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, she obviously, you know, working in a hospital knows some of these, you know, she knows how to check people's vital signs. She knows what, you know, your heart rate should be at and that kind of thing. And so, you know, I think she was probably more attuned to what was going on because of that.
I'm a PCA. That's what I do. I do vital signs. I know when patients don't look good. And I was like, this is not okay. So my cousin left work and got me a oximeter to measure his heart rate and his oxygen. And I also had a thermometer with me, which I was like taking his temperature like regular. And she brought it for me and I started monitoring his respiration and his heart rate. His fever was still high. Even with the antibiotics, even with me giving him his medicine every 4 hours for the fever, and using that pump, he was still getting worse and worse. So I got scared and I called the doctor and she was gonna give me an appointment through the phone, like a video chat. Then she called me back and she was like, oh, if he's having all these symptoms and he was just in the hospital yesterday, I suggest to go back in the hospital like right now. So I did, I go ahead and I took a shower and I went to the hospital with him on Monday.
Was that a week later from when you were in the hospital the last time?
No, that was a day after. I went Sunday and then Monday again, the next day, because he wasn't getting any better.
Okay.
Even with the pump and the antibiotics and the fever medicine, he wasn't getting any better. So I went back to the hospital. He got checked. He was dehydrated by that time because he wasn't eating anything for like 5 days, but he was drinking. You know, I got him Gatorade and my mom got him some drinks too. He was like only having like a drink here and there. So he was dehydrated when we got to the hospital. They couldn't even find his veins because he was so dehydrated. They started giving him IV fluids. They gave him Sofren for nausea because he was very nauseous at that time. And he also had a fever of 103 when we got there. So the doctor ordered an x-ray. They did an x-ray. And then she told me that we most likely dealing with the coronavirus. She was like sure that he has the virus, but we didn't have the results yet. And she also said that they were not admitting kids at that time in the hospital. If he needed to be admitted, they were going to send me to Yale New Haven Hospital.
So he was transported to Yale New Haven Hospital, and he spent 5 days there, some of that time in the intensive care unit. His mother was by his side the whole entire time. She was explaining to me she had to wear she essentially kind of had to be, well, quarantined with him because, you know, one, he's a minor, and then two, of course, the disease is pretty contagious. So she was wearing, you know, a gown and gloves, you know, as she sort of sat by his side throughout this. And so he did, after 5 days, eventually start showing improvements. You know, he had been on oxygen. He was able to eventually go off the oxygen and breathe again by himself.
We got there and they got us a room in the pediatric unit. And like the next morning, that was Monday night. And then the morning of Tuesday, they decided that he needed to go to the intensive care unit because he was on 3 liters of oxygen, and they were going to start antibiotics, and they wanted to keep an eye on him because he, you know, he was a child and he has a virus and he has the respiratory symptoms. So in case he needed more attention, he was already in there. So we went to the intensive care unit, and we were there for like 2 days. A lot of doctors came. I was there. I couldn't even leave the room at all. I was like isolated with him. I couldn't leave the room. I had to wear a mask. I had to wear a gown. They told me they were going to start medication for the coronavirus. They'd say that it wasn't approved yet, but I guess they test it in the laboratory, and one of the medicine is the malaria medicine, and another one for the HIV. They were testing those, and those are the only medicine that it looked like they fight the virus. So they were going to start with the malaria medicine for him, and if he gets worse or they don't see any, you know, signs that it's working, they were going to start doing the HIV medicine with the malaria medicine together. So they start with the malaria medicine, and I guess it was working because he was getting better and better. But like the second day at the intensive care unit, I always cry. I cry for everything. I'm so sensitive. But I tried to be strong because I didn't want him to see me like that. I didn't even want to talk to my mom because she was like crying all the time. And I didn't want to cry in front of him. But that morning, like the second day in there, I was like crying. Like I couldn't stop crying because I see him and he wasn't getting any better yet. And he was like breathing hard. He wasn't eating. He looked pale. It was like awful, like looking at my child like that in a bed. It was like crazy.
I can't imagine. I'm sure it's every parent's worst nightmare.
So I like broke in tears and I was crying. I called my cousin and my sister and I was like, I feel so scared. Like I've been trying to hold on, but today it's like I can't. And they were like, just relax. And everybody was praying, my cousin, all my family. I got like a really good family. They support me and my boyfriend's family too. And we were all praying and praying and praying.
And so he did, after 5 days, eventually start showing improvements. You know, he had been on oxygen. He was able to eventually go off the oxygen and breathe again by himself. He started on like a liquid diet. He didn't require the IV fluids anymore. And so they were eventually able to go home last Friday, April 3rd. And so they've been at home ever since. You know, he's doing better. She said he's slowly starting to eat real food. She told me the other night she made him eggs and plantains. He's apparently a big eater. So, yeah. You know, I think it was a little scary for his mom that, you know, given that he really had no appetite.
So how has this experience affected her family and maybe her work? I know that you mentioned she's got other children of varying ages. How has that affected their life?
Yeah, so she said she's fortunate that her boyfriend's mother was able to take two of her children, a 2.5-year-old son and a 1.5-year-old son. The 1.5-year-old son has asthma and uses a nebulizer, so she was particularly concerned about him. So they're out of the apartment in New London where, you know, the family lives, as is her 8-year-old son who is with his father. So, you know, that's to make sure that those family members don't come into contact with their brother while he's recovering. So it's her boyfriend, and her son, Jeriel, in their in the 3-bedroom apartment in, you know, New London. You know, she said to me, you know, the hospital gave her information when she left about, you know, what to do when she got home. But, you know, she said to me, I don't live in a mansion. I live in a 3-bedroom apartment. So it's really hard to like separate the family. You know, yes, I can keep people in their separate rooms, but we're kind of all living on top of each other. So, you know, that was really important for her to be able to separate her other kids from her son. And so, yeah, her her son and her boyfriend are quarantining there for 2 weeks.
So I was really scared. I'm like, even though I keep him in his room, he doesn't have a bathroom in his room. He doesn't have a kitchen in his room. I'll have to go in there and bring him drinks and food. And I'll have to deal with the other kids because they're still little. But, you know, they just told me, they give me like a paper telling me what to do, like to clean the bathroom after him, like not to let the other kids, you know, have contact with him. And I was like, that's going to be tough. Like, I don't have a mansion. I have a 3-bedroom apartment where everybody is always together.
And how about her health? She was obviously exposed to her son. What is her health at the moment when you talk to her?
So she told me that she had lost her sense of both smell and taste, which actually a recent study has shown could be linked to the disease. At the time that I talked to her, which again was a couple days ago, she said that that was, you know, those were the only symptoms she had, and she hoped that it stayed that way. But, you know, I think she was,
concerned that she might have contracted.
Yeah, I think she,
COVID-19.
And she was told by work that she would have to be out for at least a week. At least a month. So she's had a good friend who's been dropping off groceries for her and her boyfriend and Juriel, so that, you know, they obviously still have access to food. But other than that, she's hunkering down. And obviously with being, you know, anticipating being out of work for a good period of time. And, you know, she told me, you know, that, you know, she really obviously had to advocate for her son to get a test. And she said, you know, she advised other people who think that they are, you know, really sick and that they have coronavirus, or if their child, if they have their parent and their child are having pretty bad symptoms, you know, to advocate for yourself or on their behalf to get the test. Because she said, you know, that's what she had to do in her son's case. And,
so be persistent and,
and, you know, she said, you know, your child, you know, yourself, you know, when you feel like when you don't feel good, and you know, when your child doesn't feel good, and you know that more than anybody else.
I want people to know that they need to take this serious. People are still out there, not paying attention. They go to the store 3 times a week. Like, if you don't have to go outside, don't go outside. Stay home with your family. Take care of your family, because I could never imagine that this will happen to me. And look at this.
Well, thank you for joining me, Julia, and I hope you stay safe and have a great day.
Thanks, Carlos. You stay safe and healthy too.
The Day has received great feedback from the community during these trying times, including this message from one of our subscribers.
I have been continually getting The Day for years. This is to say thank you to The Day for continuing to publish good and bad news and to keeping the community advised. Good work. You are on the front line, just like our police and fire departments, doctors and nurses, and the farmers. Thank you.
The Day's newsroom continues to work hard through this crisis. We are mostly working remotely, but we continue to report on vital information for the southeastern Connecticut region. Now, more than ever, we need your support to continue and enhance our coverage. You can subscribe at theday.com/subscribe. And now you can make a one-time tax-deductible donation at theday.com/localnewsfund.